little Margie. I'm always thinking of you, Margie. I'll tell the world I love you. Don't forget your promise to me. I have bought a got a house and ring and everything for my hubba-ba-doo-doo, Margie. You are my inspiration, dear. That's never blue. After all said done, baby, you the only one that did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it.
Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester, and thank you so much for letting us in your ear once again. And that was Jimmy Lunsford. Not a household name, but a very influential musician in the jazz genre. And that first track we heard from Jimmy Lunsford was Margie, recorded in New York City in 1938. Ted Buckner paraphrases the tune on his alto saxophone before ushering in the trombone playing and distinctive high-pitched singing of Trummy Young. The jive tone of the song suits his voice, and the number became his most famous feature, a record and jukebox hit that was still a part of his act with Louis Armstrong's All-Stars 25 years later and into the last decade of his life, and he died in 1984. Trummy Young, someone else to look after there. Yeah, Margie, 1938. And that track featured a rather large band. And the reason I list these musicians, ladies and gentlemen, number one, they deserve credit. Number two, you might look into other recordings by these musicians. Some of them have gone on to be stars in their own right. But in this particular band, it was Jimmy Lunsford directing the band, and Eddie Tompkins and Paul Webster on trumpets, Cy Oliver on trumpet and vocals, Elmer Crumbly, Russell Bowles, and Trummy Young on trombones, Eddie Dorham doing the trombone here and guitar, Willie Smith, Ed Carruthers on clarinet, alto sax, and baritone sax, Danny Grissom, Ted Buckner on alto, Joe Thomas, clarinet and tenor sax, Edwin Milcox on piano, Al Norris on guitar, Moses Allen on bass, and Jimmy Crawford on drums. That was Margie. Jimmy Lunsford's band was the most meticulous and well-drilled of all the 1930s swing orchestras, making the phenomenal musicianship and exemplary execution sound easy. In the band's great years from 1933 to 1940, his personnel barely changed, and those who joined, such as arranger Cy Oliver and trombonist Trummy Young, found themselves part of an organization that had its roots in Lunsford's 1920s college band. This continuity of personnel created an almost telepathic understanding between the band's members. Other musicians may have nicknamed them the Performing Seals, but not without a tinge of envy at the miraculous standard the band achieved in its records and broadcasts. All right, let's move on to another track. Let's listen to Stomp It Off. And Stomp It Off features Jimmy Lunsford as director, Eddie Tompkins, and Tommy Stevenson on trumpets, Cy Oliver once again doing the trumpets and arranging, Henry Wells and Russell Bowles on trombone, Willie Smith, clarinet and alto, LaForet Dent on alto, Joe Thomas on tenor, Earl Carruthers on baritone sax, Edwin Wilcox on piano, Al Norris guitar, Moses Allen bass, and once again, Jimmy Crawford on the drums. Let's listen to Stomp It Off, recorded in New York City, 1934, on the Jazz Treasury. Stomp It Off, Jimmy Lunsford. This is one of Cy Oliver's most celebrated charts. Not only is it an accomplished piece of arranging, but it also features some brilliantly executed ensemble playing as the sections weave in and out of one another. In keeping with the title, the band abandons its favored two-beat rhythm for a stomping four-square drive. The soloists are Cy Oliver, Eddie Tompkins, and Joe Thomas. Critics and jazz historians have long written of the Lunsford Band's famous precision, its uniquely well-drilled reed articulation, and its ability to provide a perfect showcase for its soloists. Yet the contemporary press wrote not of this aspect of the band's work, but of its superb ability to present all-around entertainment. Lunsford understood that his band was capable of providing a whole show in itself and worked on an act that made the most of every member of his group. This allowed him to work differently from other bands, taking fewer intervals and requiring fewer backup artists on a variety bill. James Melvin Lunsford was born in Fulton, Missouri, not far from St. Louis, but spent his early childhood in Ohio at Warren, which is near the Great Lakeside Commercial Center of Cleveland. His father was a choir master, and music featured early in Jimmy's life. But it became a passion when the family moved to Denver, Colorado, and Jimmy came under the aegis of the town's director of music for schools, Wilbur Whitman. As coincidence would have it, Lunsford's great alto sax star, Willie Smith, was also at school in Denver, at South Denver High, at the same time. Bandleader Andy Kirk, a professional rival of Lunsford in latter years, was a little older, studying at East Denver High, one of the four schools with a musical life supervised by Whiteman. There's no evidence that Jimmy knew either Smith or Kirk at this point, but he quickly established himself as one of the city's most promising young musicians, playing several instruments. Lunsford found his first professional job in the Denver-based territory band of George Morrison, resident at the Albany Hotel and later playing shows at the city's Empress Theater. Morrison's band was not what we might think of today as jazzy, but based on the Society Orchestra of Art Hickman. Although it was in the heart of a tough mining district, Denver had a relatively relaxed attitude toward racial matters, with educational provisions for black students of equivalent quality to the white schools. Consequently, through his high school years, Jimmy acquired a liberal education that set his heart on higher qualifications. He eventually studied at two very different institutions. At City College, New York, he was able to spend his time off gigging in jazz and orchestras led by Wilbur Sweetman and Elmer Snowden. While at Fisk University, Nashville, he was more academic, eventually graduating with a Bachelor of Music degree in 1926. And this is an African-American gentleman, ladies and gentlemen. At that time, it's highly unusual. Let's move on to another track. Let's listen to Four or Five Times. Now, you may have heard this one before. This is a classic. Four or Five Times, I'm trying to think of who I heard. I think I heard Manhattan Transfer do this one, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to look into that for you. Let's listen to Four or Five Times. This is recorded in New York City once again, 1935. Let's listen to Four or Five Times by the Jimmy Lunsford Orchestra.
You're listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
Two, three, four.
Four, five times.
Okay, that was four or five times. Jimmy Lunsford. Slower and slicker than the famous 1928 recording of this tune by McKinney's Cotton Pickers, this cut became suave and sophisticated in arranger and vocalist Cy Oliver's bands. And Hans. He demonstrates the intrinsic sense of swing that he conveyed in almost all his vocals, transferring the jazzy sound of his trumpet to his singing. The opening trumpet work is not by Oliver, but by section leader Tompkins. Many critics have taken the view that the Lunsford Band really came into its own in New York in the years 1934 to 1939, when trumpeter Cy Oliver was its principal arranger, but Edwin Wilcox always maintained that the foundation of the band's style was formed by its core of ex-Fisk musicians. It started between Willie Smith and myself, he wrote. We didn't really hear other bands that gave us ideas. It was what we wanted to do. The melodic quality I had came from studying classical piano. Wilcox was sure that the natural precision of the band's playing was a consequence of Willie Smith's discipline. Cy Oliver took a different view. He was hired in Columbus, Ohio, where he was teaching, arranging in, and composing at Ohio State University between spells on the road with the bands of Zach White and Alfonso Trent. He knew full well where some of the band's unique sound came from. His earliest charts were just rehashes of the things I'd done for Zach's band. The Lunsford Band first made their name at New York's Cotton Club, and they were at the height of their powers in 1937, and that was with Cy Oliver in the trumpet section. Let's move on to another track, Hitting the Bottle. And this has the same personnel as we heard in four or five times. This is recorded also in New York City, 1935. Let's listen to Jimmy Lunsford doing Hitting the Bottle on the Jazz Treasury.
Then you find a level place, pour on the floor to place that bottle. Next you start to toddle, keep watch on the bottle. Then you step around a bit, be careful not to hit that bottle. Whoa, just like a clown, start messing around. Keep going to town. Then you make a break and you wiggle like a snake that's hitting that bottle. It's easy to do, 'cause everybody hits the bottom. Everybody except Jimmy hits the bottle.
That was Hitting the Bottle, Jimmy Lunsford, 1935. This Eddie Durham arrangement is made more intriguing by his playing on electric guitar, in what must be one of the instrument's earliest outings on record, way before Charlie Christian made his first discs. But the growling trumpeter in Hittin' the Bottle is Cy Oliver, and the clarinet is by Joe Thomas. And this is a remarkable track in many ways, not only because of its very early example of electric guitar playing, but also because Willie Smith obtains a note on his alto saxophone that is so high it was considered to be unplayable in those days, before modern harmonic techniques were developed. So as the 1940s began, the attrition caused by the policy of relentless touring set by Lansford and his manager Harold Oxley, combined with the draft to rob the band of many key talents. Before long, Bill Moore, Snooky Young, Gerald Wilson, Ted Buckner, Elmer Crumbly, and Moses Allen had all left. Although their replacements were good, the band began to lose its cohesion, and things came to a head when Willie Smith accepted an offer to join white trumpeter Charlie Spivak's band. Industrial action by the ASCAP group, the Composers Union, and the AFM band on recording further damaged the band. In 1946, Lunsford finally served his links with Oxley and signed up with the William Morris Agency, which is already handling young talents such as Billy Eckstein and Dizzy Gillespie, and a number of old sidemen, including Trummy Young, rejoined the ranks. However, this proved too little too late. The bebop bands of Eckstein and Gillespie had acquired a new level of technical prowess that outstripped the precision and drive that had always been Lunsford's hallmark. In the unlikely location of Seaside, Oregon, where the band was playing a season at the Bungalow in 1947, Jimmy collapsed while signing autographs. He died in the ambulance as it rushed him to the hospital, and his bands were stranded. All right, final track here. Let's listen to Uptown Blues on the Jazz Treasury. And we have many of the same musicians that joined Jimmy in the previous selections. This one is 1939 in New York City once again. Let's listen to Jimmy Lunsford doing Uptown Blues on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Jazz Treasury. Feel free to visit our Facebook page, give us a like, and go to our podcast on iTunes. It's free. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Once again, signing off. Next time we listen to the music of Earl Hines and we learn a little bit about his life. Thanks for listening. Until next time, enjoy the jazz.